I'm John Prideaux, The Economist's US editor, and I'm the host of a new podcast about the 2020 elections and the road to power in America. Together with two of my American colleagues and a whole cast of Economist correspondents around the world, we'll take you through the ideas and the social changes that are shaping politics in what promises to be an exceptional election year. We'll look at the long view and ask the big questions. What has the Trump administration actually achieved? What do centrist Democrats really believe in? And what kind of country is America going to be after November? We'll go beyond the headlines and the horse race to delve deeper into the contest for the White House and why it matters so much. That's Checks and Balance for the Global View on Democracy in America. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Acast, or your podcast app. Start listening today.
Hey, what's going on, all my grinders out there? This is Gene Alert, Faith Grind Inspired Podcast. And I know you're going to miss me today, but it's okay because Jeff Patrick is going to hold it down, the co-host with the most and the toast, right? But before I hand it off to him, I just want to leave you with the business tip of the day, right? And this time it's going to be realign the focus, right? Like tilt it. So tilt the lens, right? So when you tilt the lens, what I mean by that is when you see other people doing things and doing positive things in the world, you sometimes will look at it in a different lens, like, yo, that could be me. Why isn't that me or whatever? But instead of looking at it that way, have that and look at that as inspiration for you to do what you need to do, right? So don't be envious. Don't look at it where it's like, oh, man, why is this not me? Think about how could that be you, and you be comfortable in your own space, be comfortable in your own skin, and redirect that focus into your own self, right? Just change the lens and do something positive in your race, right? Win your race, run your race. So with that being said, hope you enjoy this episode with Faith Grind Inspire. Peace.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another inspiring episode of Faith Ground Inspire. And today we have
Elise Vavrika.
Yeah. And today we talked about many things. And one of the things that you guys are going to want to listen to is how she goes about making things happen in her daily career. And she keeps it at the forefront of her mind. So make sure you stay tuned. All right.
Thanks, y'all.
All right. Bye.
We are amazing because our passion is limitless and our drive is intense. Therefore, you will not deny our grind. You are now listening to the Faith Grind Inspire podcast with your host, Gene Alert.
All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of Faith Grind Inspire. Today, you guys are in for a treat because I got one of my Columbia alumni to sit with me, Elise Vavrika.
And if you see the spelling, you'll see why it's hard to pronounce.
Vavrika.
Yes.
All right. Okay, Elise, let's get into it. Today's As you might know, that this show is concerned about the mindset of the entrepreneur,
mm-hmm.
right? And we want to talk a little bit about your daily chores or your daily lifestyle as being an entrepreneur and being involved in a business setting, okay?
Definitely. So I was thinking about what I'd end up talking about on this show, and there's all those things like what you include in the bio and, you know, the formal routines that you have at the office. But I thought some things that I really found interesting about my routine that are necessary to my survival are things like what I even do on my commutes to work. Like, so when I joined my job, it's actually the first time that I'm working in the startup space. And so when the term entrepreneur comes up, I like to think, I love what you're doing on this podcast, mm-hmm. because it seems like you're approaching the term entrepreneur in a really broad sense, mm-hmm. to apply to anyone who's building something,
right?
Whether that be, you know, the traditional entrepreneur sense, which my bosses would definitely count as, they're building this amazing company, or even me, where I'm building, I like to think of myself as building my own career and in the process contributing to these things. And so, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of what I've realized in joining this new job, which is the first startup one, is you need your routines and you need your little things to get you through the day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And go ahead.
No. I was going to get into that.
I tend to get on tangents.
So, yeah, no. This is fine. Just extend enterprise, right?
Yes, extend enterprises.
All right, enterprises. I want you to go ahead and just give us the gist of what you do there and what the company's about and, you know, Get us intimately closer.
Yes. So I have a very exciting job. I love it. I'm leading all of our implementations and relationships with banks and network partners. So we are, for example, fully integrated with Visa and MasterCard. There's not much that we have to do there other than on the tech side that I don't deal with. But we are now officially allowed to talk about getting on board with Amex. And so I've been managing the entire process, soup to nuts, of getting Amex onto our system. That's, you know, everything from project planning to getting through massive banks approvals and such. So it's been really nice to be a part of that on that end. And then also on the other end, we have some really phenomenal banks on board, like City National Bank. Silicon Valley Bank is probably a familiar name given the entrepreneurial space.
Right.
And so trying to, particularly City National, I've been working with their team so much. And in past roles, my last job, I was in sales. And I was good at it. I sold a lot of stuff. It wasn't that hard. I actually was so sick I couldn't even go to work for a while. And I was just selling from my computer and on the phone, basically. But what I'm really loving about this is the chance to be back in a tech company where when I'm talking about the product, it's genuinely because I love it and I'm excited about it and not because I'm getting paid to
try to sell it. Right.
Yeah. I hate selling things. Yeah. I'm a terrible liar.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Well, no, when I quit my last job, all of the clients that I was in the process of contracts, like trying to convince them, they were like, well, we obviously really want to talk to you now that you quit. Like, let's arrange a meeting. And I told them, look, my issues were with HR. And the fact of the matter is, as a salesperson, anything I said to you, I stand by.
Right.
And that makes sales really hard sometimes.
Right.
And that's why I don't want to be a part of it. But that's what I love. This we're essentially completely revolutionizing the payment space. We're a virtual credit card company. And if you have a corporate card and we're going to get tied up with your bank, then you're going to have access to our tool, most likely for free and ideally in the next few months, where you can send virtual cards, like an infinite number of virtual cards with unique limits that you send, times that you set. Do they refill or not? They've got unique numbers, CVCs, and they all go up to your single credit card line.
Really?
Nothing like that. Like exist at all.
I know that sounds really different.
Yeah.
And what's your role at the
So just all the implementations really is like the main focus, and then the relationship management part is, you know, obviously we've got points of contact and everything, and there's so many moving parts. Like, honestly, I have to have updates with our CTO every so often just because there's so much tech stuff that I'm just not going to be, you know, intricately aware of what our engineers are doing. And so I'm just making sure that everything's happening and keeping track of it all, and also helping to expand the relationships that we already have in place.
So what'd you study at Barnard?
Oh, I'm an econ nerd through and through. Econ nerd through and through. I joke that, so I was applying to PhDs, and I took this job largely at the advice of an amazing man, my thesis advisor, Marcellus Andrews, phenomenal guy. And basically the way I see it is, payments is the economy now, and we are literally patenting making, you know, new technology in this space. And so what better way to explore my love of economics? I can do a PhD later. I'd rather learn more in the real world now and be part of building a new sector of the economy.
Well, you can always come back to a PhD.
Exactly. And I feel like every year that I've gone, oh, I didn't get it this year, that's good, because think about what you learned in this last year. The PhD is so much time. Like, yeah, technically you get paid to do it, but I don't want it for the PhD. I want it to get the most out of it.
Right.
It's really just, you go to a PhD program, in my opinion, for an excuse to do nothing but read and think for a while.
A lot of thinking. There's a lot of thinking.
I do a lot of thinking.
People don't understand that if you wanna buy your PhD, that's fine. But
you're not doing that in econ.
No. Yeah. Not at all. We were talking before the show here, and you were saying that you were thinking about going to Harvard to do your PhD.
Yeah, so that's actually a top choice school for me. The funny thing is, so I am an econ nerd. I dream of having an economics PhD, but as it stands right now, that's never going to happen because I'm interested in cultural economics, which I think we talked a bit about at dinner and how we ended up clicking that interest. I was told by numerous impressive professors, some who have even advised the admissions processes at some of these top econ programs, and they said, if you mention the word culture in a personal statement, they are just immediately going to shut the book.
Shred your...
Well, because the chances are, the thing is, they said every year there's a different person running admissions that year. And so chances are you could get a professor who actually gets what you're talking about. Mm. But if you get like a really heavy econometrics guy, he's going to be like, oh, who's this girl with this flowery topic culture?
We want numbers over here.
Exactly. And, you know, it's kind of a club in that way. And so I had a lot of really, honestly, this is to me... It was what kicked off my networking because I realized I know nothing about this. Most people applying to these types of PhDs have been working at the Fed or, you know, something similar, doing research. And I haven't. I've been out on the street, like, trying to get real world experience. So I needed to learn a lot. And Deborah Spahr actually was the one who said Harvard Business School is known for just being really open to revolutionary ideas. And it was so funny because in my mind, I'm from like the Philly area, you know, the hype is something that we joke about and, you know, the Harvard, Yale, Princeton thing. So Harvard to me always had more of like this kind of straight laced topic image in my mind until she pointed out to me, Elise, it's Harvard Business School. If you get into Harvard Business School, they will, like, they are the ones who will be able to support a creative idea.
Right.
And I really thought about it. Wow. And I looked at the research that comes out of Harvard, and I actually made this really OCD Google doc that you would probably love.
Yeah.
Of my favorite.
I want to see it.
I should pull it up for you. If you pull up my Google doc, I'll show you. It's literally all of the top econ programs or the different programs I was looking at, which are mostly business schools, or my first choice is like Woodrow Wilson, public policy at Princeton.
Got you.
I would do terrible things to get into Woodrow Wilson. But I made a list of them and I went through every single professor and I picked the ones that caught my eye based on like the short list of their research. And then I went through every single one of those, all of their research that I could find like on their main page and took note of every single one that stood out to me.
Right.
And so I've got this really beautiful kind of map of like,
only imagine.
Oh my God. And I realized like some schools have a really surprising number of professors, and you realize trends like cultural economics is a domain of the Italians. It's mostly Italians talking about it, which is really interesting. But no one's talking about it from a quant standpoint, which at the end of the day is what I care about. I want to measure that shit.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, can I?
I mean, we're podcasting, so.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's all right. No, I totally understand what you're saying. Quantitative is not the cultural approach.
Yeah.
It's a different type of a.
But it can be, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. That's why we were talking about, and I really like the fact that you wouldn't want to put it together in such a fashion.
Yeah.
That would make a lot of sense to someone like me.
Oh, yeah.
Someone like you.
Well, we talk about this stuff all the time.
Right.
When was the last time you talked about culture and the economy in the same sentence? It happens all the time.
Exactly. Okay, so we were talking about how the economy and our society and how things are changing and the things that are important while we're changing in the middle of,
like, being flexible to a changing environment is just vital.
And moral capitalism comes in, right? We were talking about.
Yeah. Alex was with us. That's definitely, and Alex was involved in the moral capitalist story.
Yeah.
My philosopher boyfriend, for those who don't know.
Yes. Alex. We got to get Alex to come
down.
We
do have to get Alex to come here and talk about the art world.
Yeah, definitely. That would be awesome. Okay, so listen. Now, as an entrepreneur, right? As an entrepreneur, tell me, what is it that you do to make your day as fulfilling and productive as you possibly can?
So I have worked, and as I'm sure like everyone, most of the people listening to this, I'm sure, are really hard workers by the nature of being the type of people who are listening to podcasts like this.
I've worked
so hard since graduating. And I mean that in a way that I haven't just worked hard in the traditional sense, but I've worked hard to find a job that fits what I'm passionate about. And if you look at my resume and my background, it to some people seems like a job hopper's degree, but no, I was actually testing things out. And so honestly, every day, like, and I've been dealing with a lot of health stuff that I'd honestly be happy to talk about, but I've had a really tough time this past year, but I got this job and I'm amazed at myself, mm-hmm. number one, for finding it. And so I think it's important to let yourself be proud of yourself because mm-hmm. this is a startup mm-hmm. where the man who founded it, I met him 10 years ago. And, you know, the fact that they hired me, yes, I interviewed, but like clearly, I, you know, if I'd reflected poorly really, over right, the last right, 10 years, right, right, they wouldn't right. have given me the job. And right. at the end of the day, I love what I'm doing.
What's your title there?
I'm a vice president. Well, I officially got my vice president title.
I think they, you know what? Okay. So one of my problems, I shouldn't say problems. One of my issues with a lot of people is they don't understand how important your career is to entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Your career is super important. And I'm not knocking anyone who's like, don't want to work for anyone or don't want to. Fine. But a career.
You need to learn from someone.
Well, you know, I don't know. People think they can do it on their own and they don't need. But it is important that your career is at the forefront of your mind in order to make things excel.
I don't know if you've ever had any, I haven't met too many autodidactic folks. Well, yeah, self-taught folks.
I try to be, but.
But like in terms of ones, like I met Tobias von Schneider, actually. I'll give him a shout out. He's another entrepreneur. I met him on a flight to Stockholm years back, and he was really nice working as the creative director of Spotify at the time. And this guy was like the first proper autodidact I just casually met as an adult. And he never went to high school, never went to college. But the thing that really stood out to me about him, and this is when I was like just out of college, so my thesis and research was still very fresh, is it's all about the thirst for learning. People who succeed and didn't go to college or didn't get a degree or didn't get educated in the traditional sense. Right. If they talk about their success, I'm pretty sure a large chunk of it is like them talking about either what's the word when you are apprenticing for people who they learn from. I mean, I was thinking about how I never really networked for years. And this is something I was like, oh, what will I talk about today? I never really networked. And it was because it made me uncomfortable because most of the time I felt like if I was going to reach out to like an older alumnus when I was like right out of school, it felt fake and not fake, but like, oh, I don't really know like, what really? I want to ask them. I used to work at a research company and you don't ever want to put a new hedge fund analyst on the phone with like a CEO of a company because, of course, they have a million things to ask, but they don't even know what to ask. They don't even know enough to know what to ask. And then I realized as I got a little older, okay, now I know what I want to ask. And it wasn't that I didn't have the questions. I just didn't know which ones were important to me. And I'm glad I didn't do that because I didn't burn any bridges and I didn't come off as this fake trying too hard. Now, I mean, the way we met, you see, like I have real genuine conversations.
So
that's what gets me through. Like every day you go to the office, especially if you really don't want to go and you're tired or whatever. Think about what you have to do that day or that week that is why you took that job. Like, I took this job and I'm now leading these implementations.
So
I think about,
I took the job to be a professor because I get to teach people.
Yeah. And so you might like some days be like, oh, I really don't feel like doing this. But then remind yourself, you get to teach people that day.
Exactly.
Holy like, shit, man.
Like,
you get to expand people's knowledge.
Exactly. Like, speaking of that, right? One of the hardest classes I took while I was at Columbia University.
Yes, let's talk school.
was at Barnard.
Yeah, that'll happen. I hear that all the time from Columbia alums.
I was like, what in the world? I have never done so much reading in my life.
Which class was it?
It was an English class. It was
I never even took English. I literally never took English.
I'm trying to remember. No, it was. I learned about things that I had no idea about. Beowulf, I had no idea who.
Oh, you like the original? That's a thing.
Yeah, I was
forget.
Like, wait a minute, when is this? You know what I mean?
Now I want to like wiki Beowulf.
And I learned about Sir Thomas More.
Oh yeah.
Like people don't understand how important this man is to the way that we're.
I went to Catholic school and Quaker school, so we learned about him.
Yeah, I had no idea about this man, but I actually wrote my paper on Thomas More, and I did get an A- in the class.
Nice, good job. It's better than I would have done.
But it was a lot of work.
What was your major?
It was a lot of work. I was film studies.
Oh yeah,
film and media studies. Yeah, so
Yeah, was, that must have been fun.
Yeah, nah, that I would like.
But really intense.
Columbia University, to me, in studying film, has a special program. The reason why is you actually get to interact a lot with the graduate school as an undergrad.
Yeah.
So you're actually apprenticing, to use that word, you're actually getting a lot of exposure to people who've already been in the film industry and who've done a lot of things and allow you to learn super duper 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 information, like things you'd never know. Like,
yeah.
A matter of fact, it is the perfect combination of culture and you want to say, yeah, you're
me getting excited. I'm like, culture, he said culture. Yeah, culture again.
Culture and technology mixed. You see, because that it has such a diverse and inclusive program, because mm-hmm. you meet people from all over the world.
I feel like that's the theme at Columbia, though.
Yeah.
And that's what I always, like, I tend to talk to Barnard-focused specific applicants, but, you know, it applies to the school in general. In fact, I always like to point out that as an econ major, I think I might have taken, like, 4 Barnard classes specifically, diehard Barnard alum. But that's what I love about the school, that, you know, it really can vary.
Yeah, we get to go.
You get to kind of
pick. I was thinking I'm going to go over Barnard and get an easy class.
Oh, and then, yeah.
Like,
you probably got a small class at the very
least. My Spanish class at Barnard was kind of small.
Was Spanish typically at Barnard? I wasn't familiar.
There was. Aprende español un poquito. Sí, muy importante hablar español ahora.
Comprendo español, je parlo francés and Italian, and when I try to speak Spanish, it comes out as French or Italian. It's so sad. My uncle is Cuban. Like, I grew up spending all of my time in Little Havana when I'd visit them in Miami. But what was I? There was something
about school.
Something about school. Oh.
Yeah.
No, so that art actually, so Columbia in general is just phenomenal for that exposure. Like, I love that I accidentally ended up in a SEPA graduate class, like in the best way. It was phenomenal when I realized what I'd done.
Mm-hmm.
But that was actually where I found the model that is the inspiration for my
culture
obsession. And it is a technology model. It's called the Romer model. Paul Romer, I feel like a lot of people have actually heard of him now, because he was like the economist who went to Burning Man this year. He's an amazing professor down at NYU, and he built this model that I want to like revamp for culture, called the Romer model.
We're just talking about that.
Were you?
Dr.
Bly.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't get to that part.
I don't know if it made the show. We might have been talking about it.
Yeah, it's an amazing model that he developed. And the idea is, like, there's no way you can actually measure that perfectly. I think people are always confused when they think economists are talking about this stuff. It's like, we know that we're not going to be perfectly right, but supply and demand models aren't perfectly right. Something is better than nothing.
Yeah, of course.
And that art world part, I mean, I feel like I always joke that's how I ended up with Alex. Like, we love talking about art in the economy, because art is... It's just such, I mean, you can go all the way back to like the Spartans and everything and talk about how if they'd just been more culturally aware in their war strategy, things like historically always would have been a little bit different.
Right.
Like,
I'm a firm believer in multiculturalism, not only that because I teach multiculturalism in medicine, but because I believe that it extends to every aspect of our lives.
Yeah. Right. Yes. I think that what I always like is, I heard someone once years ago at the Vital Voices conference, I think Hillary Clinton was probably like one of the first people to say this, just, you know, we want to help women, yes, because it's good for women, but we also want to help women because it's good for everyone.
Yeah.
Well, and that's to me how this feels. It's like multiculturalism is important because, yes, we want to help people who are part of those multicultural places. But as someone who is, you know, a white woman in New York City.
Right.
The reason that my Barnard experience and Columbia experience was what it was, and the reason I love this city and probably will never leave, is because of the multiculturalism.
Like,
I would never have been able to even dream of pursuing a PhD in the topic or even write the PhD that I did without the exposure to all. My thesis advisor is a proud black man from West Philadelphia in the 70s.
Yeah.
And left of socialist, as he'll say, or left of communist, as he'll say, even. Mm. And I picked him to be my economics advisor for a reason, because he would tell me when I was being stupid.
Right. No. Well,
he would be like, this is a brilliant argument. I disagree with it, but the point is there's no right and wrong. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you just submit this stupid, like, white girl sentence to me? Like, she would literally just get very blunt with me. And it was amazing, though, because we had this really great dialogue where I became aware of not even negative, just like different biases I had about how people participate in labor forces. And, you know, if you don't dig into the biases you have, like, you're never going to understand the world properly.
Well, one of the things that I really want to do is that I want people, especially doctors, to take a notice.
This is a huge deal in medicine. By the fact that you're doing that, I'm like, thank God.
Right. Take a look at the unconscious biases that you are projecting towards certain.
Yeah, I like, could cry.
No. Don't cry.
No, I've dealt with my own share, and so I can only imagine what others have dealt with.
Yeah.
Like, recently.
Yeah. Nah, I can tell you some stories, and I can tell you some examples, case studies that people are like, "What?"
Oh,
and
the data's horrifying.
People have no idea because they haven't looked,
mm-hmm.
right? But you and I, we've looked at some of them.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa.
There was actually, and I, this is totally random, but you're one of the few people who I feel like would find this very intriguing. There was a drug a few years back that came out, and I was aware of this because I used to work with hedge funds, so I was following like pharma news. And it was a potential treatment for sickle cell.
Right.
And they wanted to, like, have trials for sickle cell treatments. And I was thinking, like, are they going to have issue getting trial participants given the history of the way the American health system has treated the African American citizens?
Right.
And I thought that's just one example where if they're not paying attention to that when they're pulling people for this trial, like, that's just a cultural factor that it's historical and it's cultural and it doesn't seem to have a medicinal impact, but that could have a huge impact on the viability of trialing this drug broadly. Like, you could get groups of people who, for good reason, are like, yeah, there's no way in hell that I'm going to test that drug.
Iatrophobia.
Yeah. Oh, is that the word?
That's
yeah.
What it, yes,
yeah. So you know what I'm talking about. And it's just one tiny example. But I remember with the sickle cell drug in particular, I was like, this seems like something that someone's not talking about and should be. And maybe they were, and I just didn't read about it. But it's important. Culture is in healthcare. It's like, God, we just don't care enough.
Well, I just made a point.
We care enough, I guess.
I just made a point in the last show that it's not how much you know. It's all about how much you care.
God, that applies to doctors. So well.
Right.
So well.
Right.
Oh, my
right.
God.
Right.
I've been to all the doctors. I've been to some brilliant and terrible ones.
Yeah. No, there's... And that's the thing, too. The thing is that, okay, the guy who graduated at the bottom of the list at medical school is still a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He's still going to be held accountable.
Yep.
He's still... So you have to be a smart patient, and smart patient are far in between for that simple reason that they do not know how to go about researching doctors, getting information on doctors, and checking where they actually are going to get the best
outcome. Well, and the system makes it as hard as possible to do that.
Oh, my goodness.
I always say, so I not was lucky, but I lost my vision during college, and I was lucky that my aunt knew a fancy doctor in the Upper East Side, and my uncle knew another doctor like in Philly, and so within a second, I was seeing top doctors at Will's Eye because he knew someone at Penn who knew someone at HIV, you know what
right.
I mean? That
yeah,
kind
no,
of thing.
No.
And now, those doctors, like 10 years later, have thus referred me to so many different doctors, and so I got on this phenomenal foot of healthcare, and I'm just like, I have been through hell, and I cannot imagine how much more hellish it is for someone that does not have those benefits.
And imagine the ones who don't know the language.
Well, and people also, like, I think that it's really, I hate having to say this, but people need to realize you can't really trust anyone but yourself. Yeah. And, like, I mean, no one's going to care about you like you will. And I'm a little extreme in that I think people are generally too trusting of doctors and the government.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're things we need and they're very important things.
Yeah.
But you need to realize that you are your advocate. And you know, like I've had phenomenal doctors recently, but the only thing, so I just got diagnosed with this neurological sleep disorder thing, and the only prescription treatment for it is benzos. Well, I'm not taking benzos every night. Yeah. So, you know, I'm dealing with it with nutrition and all of this stuff. And one of my neurologists asked me for the recommendations. My brother, who's got a PhD in biochem, is giving me, because she was like, we don't know what to tell people who don't want to take the prescriptions, yeah. and we can't really give them advice because they risk getting sued.
Lawsuits,
which is totally fair. And so I think she was relieved that I have a brother who has a PhD in biochem and like kind of has studied like a bit of this on his own. And she was like, tell me what he knows. Even the doctors are hungry for that
information. Yeah, of course.
It's a sad situation because it's not all the doctor's fault.
No. There is a path that we all must take, and it really comes down to how much you care.
Yeah. Like, I could have just continued taking all the prescriptions.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't think I'd be where I am right now.
Totally different outcome.
Another thing that just a part of what you said, where the bottom doctor is still a doctor, I just think that it's important to note that it's good to, so I had a funny experience where someone posted on the Barnard Facebook group, which is this amazing like alumni board thing. If you ever need like an apartment or anything, let me know. I can post something for you.
All right.
And someone asked for a dentist. So I posted about my dentist because I've done mad dentist hunting before I found her, and I've been seeing her for years. And another Barnard alum went to dental school with her and was like, oh my God, I remember her. She was an amazing honors student and all her patients loved her. And so all I'm saying is, I did fundraising for Giving Day, and the first text I got back was F off from an alum who I sent a LinkedIn to recently trying to get in touch with her, because I'm like, oh man, like she what needs happened? To realize that's a really bad image to put out there.
Yeah.
She works at a startup that will not be named because that makes it too obvious.
Yeah.
But I think people just need to be aware that you can either be that person who is the one where all the and I'm not even going to say honors student, because you don't have to be the honors student. But you can at least be the doctor or the startup person or whoever that all the patients and the clients love.
Yeah.
Just be aware that even when you're going through hard times, like people around you are paying attention. And you don't
think they're not. Yeah.
But, you know, be aware.
Yeah.
Don't swear at strangers.
Yeah, exactly. Because you have no idea who's who.
You don't know who's who. No. And think about, like, all the people we met at that Columbia Leaders Weekend. You know, it's just, everybody knows everybody.
Everybody knows
and
everybody.
And that can be your friend or your enemy.
It's like,
just be nice to people.
Well, yes. One of the things that I think that has gotten me through my little time here on Earth is that I'm really conscious about how I treat people. You know what I'm saying?
Do you know the I Care Cat?
No.
You would love the I Care Cat. It's the thing from Quaker School that's for like the lower school. But it's just the I Care Cat has all these tenets. Like, you always use, if you and I were to have a fight, and this is really useful for little kids, if you were to have a conflict, you never say you. You always use I words. The I Care Cat only thinks about like how other people want to be touched, talked to. And it's all this mentality of being aware of the impact you're having on people around you. Like, I'm super sensitive to sound and light and everything. And so now I've tried to be a little more aware of, like, I'm a very loud person. But I think people just are never aware of, like, I don't know. When you're talking to someone, whoever it is, whether it's an Uber driver or whoever, you can be, like, a negative impact on their day. Or for the 2 seconds that you're chatting, even just the mood that you have, you can brighten up their day. And I've been trying to do that, and in turn, it's made me feel a lot happier.
Yeah.
Because people think, they're like, oh, man, you're really, you seem nice. And I'm like, oh, thank you. I feel nice.
Definitely.
Positivity, and Lord knows, I'm very negative sometimes. Like, last night, I was practically swearing in a restaurant because there were flashing lights going on, and it was really, really rough for me. But, you know, you just always have to be your best kind of self. And I think that that's what people have to keep in mind. You never know what other people are going through. And this is professionally, like, especially, which I don't think people really think about much.
Mm-hmm. polarism.
Yeah. People think about that with like their regular life, but it's like, no, like your clients and prospects are people too. Yeah. Like just be nice. Yeah, like you can all be friends.
You never know.
Yeah. Like people I never was able to sell at my old job now reach out to me and we're in touch.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Be a nice person. You can make friends everywhere.
Yeah. This is one of the things I think that if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking mm-hmm. to do business, it's very important that you take time to not only care for your business, but to care for the people that you are involved with. Because everyone that comes into my space, I have just adopted you as my responsibility.
My company takes that so seriously, which is part of why I was so felt so good about taking that job.
Yeah, right.
My first conversation with the founders, all of them, they have been, and it's made hiring a fairly slow process, but because...
Come closer to the mic.
Come closer to the mic.
Yeah.
Hiring a fairly slow process, but culture is everything. Mm-hmm. And I knew that, so my bosses are former execs from Amex. Like they are, mm-hmm. you know, tech, mm-hmm. brilliant, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. applicable guys. And a lot of times in that situation, people forget about culture. And it felt really good to know that as they're building their company together, that remains like absolutely on the forefront. And, you know, it's something that really, really matters. And it takes effort to build a company culture. And it's something we're paying a lot of attention to, like making sure we're having a holiday party, making sure we're all hanging out. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I really like all of my colleagues.
Yeah, that's super important.
Yeah. And at my last job, that was honestly a huge, huge problem. And that's been issues at other jobs as well. Not so much colleagues in my last mm-hmm, job. Mm-hmm. I had great colleagues in my last
job. Yeah, I got you.
But in terms of like the company culture and how you treat your employees, if you make it, like GLG made it clear that they don't value me and they didn't value most of their employees. And I'm very open about that.
I don't like phonies.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like I had promoted them to, I'm friends with the director at Barnard's career development office, mm-hmm. Beyond Barnard. And mm-hmm. immediately I'd finally one day had such a horrendous, honestly illegal conversation. Things were said to me with HR and I called him and I was like, I cannot condone any alumni working there. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just a shame because it's a brilliant product.
Yeah.
And there's great people working yeah, there. So right. when people are like, who should I go to for research? I'm like, them.
Right.
But no, you shouldn't work there. And I'm like, good luck keeping that quality up
mm-hmm.
when you can't respect your people.
Right.
Exactly. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. So let me ask you a question. Where do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
Oh, man. Well, I definitely see myself still at Extend because hopefully we will be just massive by then. And I don't know whether Extend It will be a phrase, but, you know, we really hope to be a pretty well-known name by then.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully essentially in the same spot, leading the efforts. And really at that point, I'd love to see us growing more strategically being, we started in the corporate commercial space because virtual payments are built in on those back end systems, even though most banks don't really take advantage of it. So there's like no tech implementation involved on or tech integration involved on our side or very minimal tech integration. Mm. But the consumer side is what I'm really excited about.
Yeah, yeah.
And that just requires a lot more build out. So it's obviously the longer term plan. And then, you know, for me, long term, like a little beyond that, my dream is to get into policy, public policy. I think we might have talked about this a bit.
Yeah.
Education policy is my passion,
mm-hmm.
but I hate politics. And so I think I've actually set more of my focus on the correctional
health policy is my objective too.
Yeah,
there's
health policy is just I'm just not the expert.
Yeah,
but with like the correction system, that's something that I think I could see myself. I'd love to put my research focus on that and making things better in this country, which goes back to what we were talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
That system is just. Great. To me, I see that as one where I'm like, I feel like I could actually do something there. So that's my goal right now. I want to get a PhD and fix our correction system.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the, I think, one of the important things when you're going forward with your career is that you must actually think about the leadership you're going to follow.
Yeah. And you need very, I think that to me, I like to think of, and so I I really like Sylvia Plath. I just started reading the Bell Jar, and people are like, "Oh man, it's so sad." I don't think it's sad at all. I think that it's an interesting like peek into someone's mind during a difficult time. It's a different perspective, and I really like her use of the branches.
Right.
Because to me, I think that it's really important to have goals that you recognize you might not achieve because you decide you don't want to. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I have what I consider typically different prongs of paths. Like, one of my goals, I want to get a PhD. I want to get on the Barnard Board of Trustees. Mm-hmm. I want to win a Nobel Prize, which is like the ultimate, you know. And then my ultimate goal, which I just established recently, is we realized that when the current princess of the UK is around like the age to be coronated. Is that the?
I think that's what it's called.
Her coronation. I know it's her coronation, so let's use the noun.
Yeah.
The coronation will be around the anniversary of the United Kingdom.
Mm.
And so I feel like my goal is, because I will be old then, and if I get invited to that thing, it means that I have achieved all of my other goals. Because the only way to get invited is to get a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, that is awesome goal.
So like, that sums it up.
Okay, I got
Princess
you.
Princess Charlotte.
When we talk about truth, right, when people are telling us truth, because I consider truth telling to be a major part of doing business and ethics. And you said to yourself, sales is just right. The truth, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when we think about truth and how it plays out in our personal life, we have our personal truth.
Oh yeah.
Right. Your truth is a little different from my personal truth.
Oh, 100%.
Right. I understand this. But when it comes to what you and I want to extend to the public policies and to there's a different type of truth there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different governance there.
Did we talk about that a bit at dinner? I don't know.
Did we?
I don't think so. Maybe.
I remember we were chatting away.
We were talking about so many different things. No, I love that because I totally agree with what you just said.
Yeah, right. Oh, you can't use your personal truth to govern the poppy.
100%. I always tell people, like, and my parents are, like, so wonderful, and they sent me to Quaker school and tried to, like, give me the most diverse, like, childhood ever. But when you're growing up in the suburbs of, like, certain cities, you know, that's only going to go so far. And, you know, we were a conservative household. We were Italian, Catholic. I grew up in a very conservative setting. And so I always tell people that you have to recognize those, and whether it's biases, whether it's your internal views, whatever, there's things that you might feel, and sometimes they're going to conflict with what you logically believe. And over time, they'll probably end up switching. But, like, I grew up in a conservative home, so I have to remind myself that just because someone doesn't have a job doesn't mean they're lazy. Like, I know that that's true.
Right.
But when I'm thinking about economics, sometimes you have to remind yourself of certain facts. And I want to talk about that out loud, which I think a lot of people would be afraid to say out loud, because if we don't acknowledge where the differences lie in our own biases and our views, I want to know what gave me those biases and how can we avoid that?
Right.
Like, my parents never wanted me to be biased, so it was more like things were accidental.
Ingrained. It was ingrained.
Yeah.
We talked about random things happening on the show, on the last podcast. Random things happen all the time.
Oh my God. Most things in your child's life, your life, you're never going to control, and they're going to turn you into who you are. Right. You got to pay attention to what the hell that is.
Random. Exactly.
The unexamined life is not one worth living was a major tenet in my high school. I guess you could say the examined life is worth living, but I'd say the unexamined life is one not worth living.
No.
What are you doing?
Yeah, right. I tell my son all the time, what are you going to do with your life?
How old is your son?
He's 12.
Oh, man. That's a kind of stressful age for him.
What are you going to do with your life? You know what I'm saying?
What's his passion right now?
Well, see, he's a video game guy like everybody else.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. Like, that actually, I dated a guy, an entrepreneur who still is, I think he's still got his own startup. By the way, they were killing it. I thought like it was totally not my lifestyle. But this guy had been a computer gamer and he ended up becoming a computer engineer, like a programmer. Mm-hmm. My brother, they honestly, like, he would get in so much trouble in high school for, like, not going to class. And turns out he was just one of those people, I think, who was just, like, bored because he was too smart for it all.
Yeah.
But he was constantly on the computer, so much so that my mom would have to hide his, like, keyboard and stuff. And I would have to not tell him where he was because I was little sister. But the fact of the matter is now he ended up going into, now he's actually a biochemist, but he started a computer science. Like, you can take those things and you can turn them into something useful. Maybe make your kid build a computer from scratch. That's something that most of my, like, guy friends when I was little had
I have
to
a
do.
Tech background too. I know how to build a computer from scratch.
Yeah, like, so that would be a fun activity.
Yeah, we might have to do that. Thank you for that.
Yeah, like, I think Alex said his dad would only let him use, like, some old school coding languages when he first started using a computer. Like, and that's my plan. Like, my kids are going to get access to computers in the evolution of a computer. Yeah, like, I never learned DOS. I want them to learn DOS.
Right.
Make them appreciate what's... Because, like, video games are amazing.
Yeah, they are amazing. Some of the games, I'm like, what? Is that a video game?
I watched the trailer for the Final Fantasy movie from, like, the early 2000s recently, and Alex's video games now are better quality live than that movie was. Wow. Like, it's insane. Wow. And so if you can get your son, like, reading, like... Or into, like, the engineering, the art, the design, so much amazing stuff. It's really cool goes into that.
Definitely.
And then he can keep playing his video games and still learn.
Okay. I heard. All right. That's fair enough. I'm going to wrap up right now.
Oh, okay.
I was going
to
wrap up.
Oh,
good.
Those are the producers. What was I going to say? Brianna just threw me off.
Oh, we were talking about your son with the video games.
No. I was talking about the truth. Back with the truth.
Back to the truth.
Yeah, the truth. Personal truth, political truth. And then there are truths that we can't avoid.
Yeah.
Like gravity.
Yeah, and the fact that women have babies and men don't.
Right. These are things that we...
That's something that, like, came up in gender econ classes for me. It's like, at the end of the day, men are never going to have babies, at least not in our lifetime.
Right. Exactly. Well, you know,
you have to work in those limitations, though. At the end of the day, women have to deal with certain things that men don't. Men have to deal with things women don't. It applies across a lot of different things, and you have to be aware of those things.
Yeah, for real. Whoa. All right. Alyssa.
So fun.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate you coming out. Gene wasn't able to get here today. You know, we're going to...
I'll have to meet him another time.
Yeah, he'll probably be on his way here for a second, but I know he'd probably want me to ask this question before you go. The show is Faith, Grind, Inspire, right? So out of those three words, which one of them is the most pertaining?
Inspire 100%, because you can't do anything without the inspiration behind it. Or at least you can, but, like, it's not going to last. You need to be inspired and excited about what you do. That's the only way you're going to survive grinding.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. That's very good. So, inspire. We're going to take it at that, all right? And I want to thank you for coming out to the show today and chatting with me a little bit. And let's see if we could get Alex to come out.
Yeah. Let me see if I can convince him. Yeah. He's more of a private face than I am. So we'll work on him.
Yeah, all right. And is there anything you want to give any final...
No, thank you so much for having me. This is a blast.
Is there any way that they can reach you?
Alyse at paywithextend.com. It's really easy. If you look at my name, it's Alyss at paywithextend.com.
All right.
Add me on LinkedIn. I love connecting with people. Seriously. I do it all the time.
Definitely. So that's just it. This is another wrap. Faith, Grind, Inspire. I big up my man Gene, who wasn't able to be here. Timbo. the official Devo. And to Bree, thank you very much. I'll see you guys next time. Peace.